Hey everybody, this is Albert Escobedo, your host for the Pet Peeves podcast. Just asking if you like my podcast, if you're enjoying the content and what you're listening to, become a sponsor. Find the link on the Anchor, the sponsor link on my Anchor website, and or on the SoundCloud website. Wherever you find the descriptions for these episodes, you can find the link to become a sponsor. For $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, help the podcast grow. Thank you guys very much. Thank you for listening. Bye. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Pet Peeves Podcast. This is Albert Escobedo. We have a very, very special guest for you today. The one and only Brad Wilson. Brad contacted me. He's making a film, The Furry Fortune, based off of a popular children's book. And we're just really happy to have you here. Brad, how's it going?
Good, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. You know, I was, I got your name and all, and I said, man, I love the Spanish-speaking community, the Hispanics and all, Alberto Escobedo. And then I find out you're Korean.
Ha, not true. I'm Mexican.
Oh, are you? Somehow I thought you were Korean.
I lived in South Korea for a few years. I was teaching English and doing stand-up comedy.
Oh, so that's it.
Yeah, so I spent some time there, and I do have a lot of Korean stories and content in my comedy and in like all the my social media stuff. So I can see somebody making that confusion. But no, I'm 100% Mexican-American.
I love that, man. I was thinking that, wow, this is where the comedy starts, man. We've got a Korean with a Spanish name, you know, with a Hispanic name.
They're called Filipinos. No, I'm just kidding. but no.
Well, man, it's great to...
Pretty ethnically ambiguous, so that's not your fault.
Oh, God. I'm actually from another country originally.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you know, I'm in L.A. and it's a real melting pot. I'm from Texas.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've heard tales.
People always take the bait. You know, I'll say, yeah, I'm from another country. We're Texas.
Yeah, it's damn near.
L.A., man, L.A.'s like another country.
It is. It's true. I'm from Indiana, so I'm like, it's very different, too. Like, the difference between California, Indiana, and Texas, it's probably about as different as it gets.
Yeah, huge, man. It really is. Well, I'm thrilled to be here and I'm glad to meet you and really happy to talk about our film.
Yeah, me too. I'm really glad that you guys chose this podcast, the Pippies podcast. We're a huge proponent of anything animal related, and I was reading your guys's about your movie. It's a crowdfunding project that really caught my attention. You know, my podcast is a lot of comics listen to it, a lot of comics as guests. And we're always looking for ways to make a dream come true without having to ask, you know, like I saw your articles going around the Hollywood accounting.
Yeah.
And that I really would love to talk more about how you guys got the idea for a crowdfunded movie and then why you chose a dog book originally. Where did the dog book, like, did you read this book and decide? Is that how
it was? Yeah, I actually, it's like, which came first, the chicken or the egg? The book actually came first. And I met the writer in Texas, by the way. By the way, if you hear a noise back there, that's my dog who fights with her food. Does your dog do that? Just fight with a bowl?
I know dogs do it.
Why did they do that? Is it because like some kind of animal instinct that they're getting their prey?
I think they like to work for their food, that it's not natural for them to just have food laying out. So I think a lot of dogs just get bored. They get bored and they just make a game, a toy out of everything. Why not their food?
I see. That makes
sense.
And
then it's super rewarding. You know, they get to eat. They get to eat the game. So it's very, very rewarding behavior.
Good. Man, you just saved me a fortune in dog therapy. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's what the podcast is for. Let's help people.
Well, I met this writer in Dallas.
D. Good Morgan.
Yes, D. Good Morgan, otherwise known as Donna Morgan, who is also going to be is the executive producer on the film. And, you know, I'm an independent film producer. I've been in the film business for 35 years, and I think been involved with like 40 films. I don't count. I don't look bad for 23, do I? I mean, the film business has been pretty good to me.
Bars, but,
this book and this idea about a dog that sheds money. Mm-hmm. And it takes you through a summer and the people are going nuts. They're like buying boats and cars and all kinds of stuff. But then at the end of the film, you find out that they find out that it's not about money. Life is about family, you right. know, which I really love. I tried to make kind of not a change. I mean, I've done different movies, but I've tried to really concentrate on projects and films that uplift the human spirit. I mean, as corny as it may sound, I mean, I'm a film producer, and people that I'll never see in this lifetime will see my movies, and I feel a responsibility. You know, I want to do good stuff.
No, and, I think you're doing the right thing. When I read the description, the summary, that it's a family film, and I was like, yeah. we need more of that. More
man,
of that.
Man, you're not kidding. Do you have kids yourself?
I have a stepson, and then my wife and I, we're working on a kid. That's good. That's good. And no, none myself. My stepson is 20, though, so he's hardly a child.
Oh, good. Well, if you guys are fortunate enough to have kids, you'll see what I mean. But yeah, I have two daughters. And they're one will be 20 on Monday, and then I have another daughter. She's 24, going on 4. When they were young, man, you know, you go to movies and you just cross your fingers. Oh my God, what's going to come on? So I hear you. I mean, I think family movie and these distributors who distribute our film, man, they'll always say, find me a family movie, find me a family movie. I think so. Yeah. So anyway,
it should be more trendy, more mainstream. I've been a teacher for a long time, teaching all ages. And I do think it makes a difference. The content, the media that the children are exposed to, it absolutely makes a difference. And we all love the Disney movies growing up. So it's not like there's something wrong with that niche.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that niche if you do it right.
And this crazy town out here, this Hollywood, you know, it's just amazed me sometimes how things just go right over their head. You know, some of them, you know, they want to do these bigger kind of shoot 'em up blockbuster kind of thing. Yeah, but anytime a family movie is released, it goes to number one. But I don't know. It's just they don't.
One movie you could take your whole family to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
A little bit of an advantage there.
It's crazy. So I did a movie. I've got a movie out now. It was a smaller regional theatrical across the country. And it's on Amazon Prime now. And it's called The Meanest Man in Texas. Greatest title I've ever had for a movie, but it's a true story. It's pretty rough, but it's very positive and uplifting, believe it or not, with that title. But anyway, the guy that directed that movie, I brought on, and he's going to direct The Furry Fortune, and his name's Justin Ward. And he took the book and wrote the screenplay. He's a great writer and a really, really good director. So he'll be directing the movie. And so we have a really nice script, and we have the song, the legendary songwriter composer Steve Dorff.
I saw that
come on board to do the music. And
I'm guessing all these people love dogs. Is that how you're selling
it? They do. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, they love me. You know.
Yeah. So they're, hey, no. You're lovable. I like you already, man. You're from Texas. I like it. My wife is from El Paso, Texas. My wife.
Is that my brother-in-law's from El Paso?
Hey,
isn't that something? Yeah,
almost related.
Boy, that's true. God bless them. They're having a tough time over there with that.
Yeah, it's true. The COVID numbers are way up. That's true.
My God, it's just horrible.
And it's weird. You know, you think it's just on the news, but people like my wife's friends, and they're really getting it. So it's really scary.
Totally. I know. Well, my nieces and nephews, they live over in Midland, and two of them go to college in Lubbock at Texas Tech, and they're getting over it now. I mean, it's horrifying, you know.
That keeps coming up in the podcast since March, obviously. So the COVID comes up in conversation. I'd love to talk about it more, but I don't want to get off the topic of the movie with the director. You were talking about the writing, the screenwriting. It's just going to be a great project.
Yeah.
I saw that it's a live action movie.
That's
surprising to me too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not animated. It's live action. And here's the thing about the music. You know, Steve Dorff is one of our legendary songwriters.
I read that. I'm like, wow, that's a big deal.
Huge, man. Well, one of his best friends is another legendary songwriter, Paul Williams. And together they've written the music of our lives, you know. Well, he and Paul are writing a song for the movie, like a theme song. So that's huge, man.
Wow, that's awesome. That's
huge, yeah. And then this sort of like came in our life. You know, you're young, but you know, years ago there was a famous television series on called Batman.
Yeah.
And it was
Adam West Batman?
Adam West and Burt Ward. And Burt played Robin.
Oh,
well,
wow.
Burt's later started a dog food company called Gentle Giants.
Oh,
and
wow.
As it turns out, it's like, I think the number two or three fastest growing dog food company in the country. It's in every Walmart store. It's in Target. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
And he and his wife, they adopt out Great Danes and other dogs too, but Great Danes. So they worked with scientists and invented this dog food. Albert, they're saying these dogs can live up to 27 years old.
Really?
It's unbelievable.
That's unreal.
And I've had long talks with Bert about it. Well, anyway, I originally contacted him. I knew his manager, and I knew about this dog food. So I'm thinking, wouldn't it be great if we could have like a promotion, and maybe when the movie comes out, have a flyer or like a little poster in all of the packages of the Gentle Giant dog food, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, long story short, we made a deal with Bert, and we're going to do that. But then Donna, the writer and the director, and I started talking. We said, wouldn't it be funny if we could get Bert to do a cameo in the film, you know, as maybe Robin? So long story short, he's going to do it. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think. And he's a great guy. And he and his wife are very serious about dog health. And they're actually going to give us some little tips to kind of organically put in the movie. Like one thing.
I was going to ask about that. You're going to add stuff to the movie about some pet health and the
food. Yeah, yeah. And organically in an entertaining way. Sure. But like this, who knew? I didn't know this, but you're supposed to elevate the dog's food instead of
so not leaning over to eat.
Yeah,
it causes mega esophagus.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I'm an RVT veterinary technician. I gotta know.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh well, I mean, I talk for hours to these people about dog health. You know, it's really interesting.
Absolutely. You know, it is something that I didn't always know. I didn't always know about elevating the dogs when they're eating, but it's the big dogs with the big necks where they have more distance to cover.
Yes.
Over. Like a little dog doesn't have a lot of distance to cover, but a big dog has like 4 feet that they got to, and then they got to fight gravity when they're swallowing. So it causes
tension
in their esophagus. And then they have a lot of digestive problems, a lot of reflux.
Totally. It's exactly what he told me. Exactly. And man, here's one for you. Here's a new one. He and his wife live with 50 dogs. They have 50. Most of them great. I asked him, I was talking to him last night. I said, man, you know, when you get in the bed, I mean, do they like cuddle you? He said, there's 50 dogs in the bed. Of course.
Of course. Yes. They're all pushed to the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. But man, we've got some real positive things going on about the film. And, you know, about the crowdfunding, I'd love to talk with you about that. I mean, it's
sure.
You know, I've been in this game a long time in Hollywood, and it's not easy. And some of the people and some of the things that go on in this town are just it's not my. You know, I tell people, I thank God I was born in Texas. You know, I at least have some morals about me. You know?
Have some independence. Yeah.
You know,
just to give the listeners an idea of what you're talking about. So you guys crowdfunded this whole film, and you got more than you asked for. It's just a huge success. Correct?
Pretty close. Yeah, we're still raising money.
Okay.
And we have just a little more time to go. And in fact, our attorney, who's I'll tell you about, he's our crowdfunding attorney. He called me before the interview. He said, now, if you can just say investfurryfortune.com about 50 times during the interview, he said, it'll be great. You know, it'll be great. But that is the place to go, investfurryfortune.com.
Yeah, I posted it on the Facebook post, and I'll post it in the Instagram and Twitter also.
So oh, bless your heart.
Hopefully it'll come out on Monday. What is that? November, what, 15th? Or what's Monday? No.
Well, it's the 16th because it's my daughter's birthday.
Right.
So, yeah. 16th. And it's just that is our last week. And it's real interesting. This is a whole new thing, man. It's called equity crowdfunding. Crowdfunding is a great thing. You know, you throw it, say you throw in $100 or something, you get an autographed script and all of that, which is nice. This equity crowdfunding, it's a new kind of thing. It's not been done for movies, as far as I know. I think we're the first ones to do it. But you get all the stuff you get in crowdfunding. I mean, you know, we have our perks and all of that, but you're also owning a piece of the movie, equity crowdfunding. Yeah, it makes so much sense. There are many things I like about it, but, you know, like I have to raise, I'm an independent producer. I was in the studio system for years, but I got out of that. Got into the independent world for different reasons. I think it's more interesting projects. But usually investing in a film is cost prohibitive to like regular guys and girls like us. You know, I mean, you got to be pretty wealthy. But this brings it down. I mean, for as little as $100, you can own a piece of this movie. Yeah, which I love that. It's open to everybody. And this town, Hollywood. You probably read about it. They have their own Hollywood bookkeeping system. Like, for instance, the movie Forrest Gump. That thing has done over $600 million at the box office. And to this day, the studio claims it still has not been into profits. That's impossible. Impossible. The writer, the guy that wrote the script, had to go all the way to the Supreme Court with it. And I think Veronica Mars might be another one that was in that. And so they have I just don't like that, you know. And absolutely. The thing about this, the way we're doing this crowdfunding, it has to be very transparent because it's going through the SEC. And I've always been honest, you know, I always thought I have, you know. Oh, but man, I'm telling you what, this transparency you have to do this way is just a whole other level of honesty. And I like it though. And so we're going to be in a situation that on our website, investors will have a special place they can go and they'll be able to see every penny that's spent and every penny that comes in. It very well could be the new way to raise money for independent films. The studio system will never go for it because to be transparent, you know, and they're never, but for guys like me, man, and I love that. And I love to get people involved, you know, you know, regular people. Absolutely. I think it's great.
I saw that in we love that about anybody. We're trying to do that ourselves in comedy, you know, we're waiting for an HBO special or a Showtime special, but now with the internet, we can record our own specials and put them out on YouTube or on Spotify or whatever platforms that we want, and then get work from that we own all of it. We own it all. We want to make merch. We can do that. And it's all like funded by people that watch the content or paying like $1 a track or $5 for an album or whatever straight to us. So that's how a lot of our friends are doing it now. And that's pretty new. I'd say that's since like 2017, maybe.
Oh, really? Because I was going to want not to harp on the COVID, but I wondered if that had something to do with this whole new thing you're doing, because we've been stuck inside.
No, but it's been going on. A lot of things. I think it was just the social media movement, you know, where people were just able to build a following and build a brand by themselves. I think that we, as comedians, I speak for us all, sorry comics out there, that we just saw other people doing what we knew we could do better.
Yeah.
Like, who's better at content, short, funny, interesting things online than comics? That's what we do all day, write jokes.
It's a great idea. I know a lot about the music business, and sometimes I think that's worse than the film business, the way they take advantage of you, you know? And so I'm sure, you know, bypassing some of that kind of thing, the record industry and distribution, that's gonna help you a lot. I'm turning the interview. I'm interviewing you now.
Fine.
You'll turn it around to where you'll be able to self distribute you and others.
Absolutely right. So you want it to have really high production value, really high quality sound, really high quality video, really good editing, really good all that, and then you can put little clips online and you'll get thousands and thousands and thousands of views on like Instagram and TikTok. Or, you know, you couldn't do that doing regular shows even before COVID. Before COVID, you'll go do a show and there might be you know, 100 people there. That's a good show for you.
But yeah, of course.
You get on the internet and it gets 6,000 views in an hour. You're like, yeah, I got to keep doing this.
Yeah, yeah. That's so that's so great and so interesting. I mean, things are just turning in another direction now, and I just think it's great.
Me too. I put out a comedy special on YouTube for free, an hour-long special in 2017, and I was blown away at the success of it. Like, I really expected nothing, and it went really, really well. And then a lot of my friends got inspired to do their own specials, and of course, they all did them better. They saw what I did wrong and improved on it. And now all theirs are doing great. And it's like we're just starting a new trend where comedians know that we don't have to wait for that big budget. We don't have to wait. Man. If you have a talent, other people will back you up. A lot of people worked for me for free on the project. They just wanted to be involved. Just like you're saying, if you can invest $100, that's nothing. And you can have an ownership of a successful movie. That sounds like a very, very good investment.
I think so too. That's exactly what I was thinking. Because I thought, you know, what... I never promise anything, because if you promise something, you're lying, you know.
Right,
but the chances are very good, and I'll tell you why, because it's probably the same thing. Chances very good these investors are not only going to get their money back, but make a dollar or two. And I was thinking going in this, God forbid, if they were to lose everything, it'll be the best, most fun $100 they would have ever lost. I don't believe they're going to lose, and here's why. One thing I've learned, and you may be experiencing this or have yourself, you've got to keep the quality as high as humanly possible, but the budgets as low as possible.
Yes.
You have to do that.
That's the secret, because the competition, hopefully you're outsmarting them. It's hard to outwork a bunch of other hardworking people.
Absolutely.
You got to do something different.
And what happens is people get, I don't know about in your business, but in my business, you know, ego starts taking over and people get sucked in. Oh, we want to do a $10 million movie or 20 million. Man, that's the kiss of death. You know, it's just like this movie,
they say.
That's right. That's right. And it just makes sense. You keep the budget as low as possible and the quality as high as possible. And you know, like I told someone this week, I may have that word producer in front of my name, but really nowadays I'm a content provider is what I am.
Yes.
There's so many places that your comedy things could fulfill, my movies could fulfill.
Right.
I don't have it anymore. My daughter gave me one of these, I think it's called a Fire Stick, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I took out my cable television, but before I did, I was on I forget what it was, but there was like three tiers. I was on the middle one with 300 channels. I maybe watched 12, maybe. And the highest tier was 600, you know.
Yeah.
But every one of those people, man, they need content, you know.
They need content. No matter what the content. And if you can bridge two things, like anything with animal is good, first of all. And everything.
Yeah, it really is.
Comedy with animals, and then medicine with animals, and then just a pet health. Like mine is a pet health podcast. It's not about wild animals. I only know dogs, cats, pocket pets, things like that. What you're going to bring to an animal hospital. But that little niche, how many people own pets? Like millions, billions. So,
billions. And
who loves comedy? Everybody. So we
everybody, man.
And it doesn't have to be all about pets, and it doesn't have to all be about comedy. Really, they're coming for us. Like you said, they're coming for the personalities. They just want to be entertained, whatever, because they could change the channel so easily. You just have to make sure yours doesn't sound like someone else's, really.
Exactly. Man, you're right on the – by the way, speaking of comics, I watched that David Letterman interview with Dave Chappelle the other night.
Man. Wow, okay.
Did you see it? I mean,
I'm not sure. Is it very, very recent?
Yeah, it's very recent.
Maybe not. I saw the Dave Chappelle monologue on SNL, and that's
I heard it wasn't that great this time.
I mean, I get why people would say that, because he didn't get a lot of laughs, but I think Chappelle, as he gets older, he's not really aiming for the laughs as much as he's trying to educate people just by the way that he's
true.
Speaking.
Yeah.
And, I think people that don't know Dave Chappelle's comedy take him the wrong way a lot of times. Like, sometimes he's not joking. Sometimes he's just saying
truth.
And you're like, oh, that's not funny. You're like, that part didn't mean to be. You didn't mean that part to be.
Yeah. I think, I bring my own sound effects, man.
What's the dog's name? Or his?
Bear.
Hi, Bear. How's it going?
By the way, I don't tell anyone from Texas this, because they already think I'm nuts living out here in L.A. But this is a you know, you'd think me from Texas and a manly man like myself, I'd have a Great Dane or a, this is a Yorkie poo.
Oh, wow. You went straight Los Angeles on them, didn't you?
Oh my God. And of course, my daughter, you know, she's 7 years old, this dog, and she finally wore me down, and I got the dog for her. And of course it lasted 30 minutes, you know, and now, but now, like, my daughter's got a boyfriend now. She's never here. I find myself talking to this dog.
Oh yeah, man. That's your dog now. That's your best friend.
Yeah, I know. Hey, you know what I was going to say? That's interesting you said that. I think sometimes, tell me if I'm wrong, but a lot of times comedians are not joking. I mean, they say stuff that comes off funny, but it's really not a joke a lot of times.
Oh yeah. It? I mean, I would say, like, it all has to come from truth or it's not really that funny. Like, I think when comedians are starting out, they think like a child. You think like a cartoon. Comedy has to be slapstick or shock value as a young comic, because that's what you think is funny, because you're probably 21 and you're a dumb. But as you get older, you realize, like, you have to entertain more than the college frat guys. You know, you have to be more broad than that. You have to have a little bit more perspective. So you can't have much perspective if you're young. It's just impossible.
That's true.
So it takes a while for comedians to get to the point where they can be honest about things. But in the beginning, it's like a little bit of truth and a lot of joke. And then as the comic matures, it switches. It's a lot of truth and a little bit of joke. But the better they are at comedy, and it depends. Like, you have a storyteller that's going to talk for 5 minutes and then tell a joke, or you have a punchline comic like Anthony Jeselnik, and he tells a joke every minute, you know, or every 30 seconds, he's got a punchline. And that's a different kind of comic. But I think on both ends, the more true it is, the more funny it is, because smart people will realize that it's harder. It's harder to make something true funny. It's something you're just making up. That's not that hard to make funny, but something true, you got to dig. You really got to put your words together properly, or smart people are going to not laugh.
The more truth, the more people get that, right? And can identify with it in their own life.
And then the tension builds. Let's just say, when you're speaking truths and people are identifying, they're tense. And then you hit the punchline, and then the tension is relieved, and it's a bigger laugh, and it's more lasting. They'll remember that later. They're going to think about it later. And that's really what you want, because then they come back.
You know, it's so interesting. That's so close to good acting. You know, I let me name drop as much as I possibly can.
Great.
But you know, I spent 11 years with Robert Duvall, and we did like 14 movies together. And we talked hundreds of hours about acting. It was just fascinating. You know how he got, and one thing that he always said, and it's very interesting. He said, you know, if you take all of the acting classes and the books and the videos, everything you've ever learned about acting, and put it in a big pot and start boiling it down. He said, acting comes down to two things and two things only. And that's talk, listen, talk. And it all has to be grounded in truth, you know? And it's interesting. I never thought about that in the comedic world, but it's the same thing, isn't it?
It is. I think about that like an actor. They have to find some truth in whatever they're performing. They have to recall a memory or just make it up. How would I feel? And how would I really react? And that's
right.
If I were this character, obviously. And a lot of it is like the more believable, right? Then it's more truthful. But you know, the acting part comes, and the comedy part comes too, where you don't know as the audience member, you're not sure which part of it is true and which part of it is joke
until
I tell you, unless I let you in on the joke, which is another part of comedy. Like there's a little bit of this that I want you to not be sure of. Was he telling the truth on that part? Did he really mean that part? Like, there's a little bit of mystery. I'm a little bit of a magician. I'm not going to tell you my joke.
Yeah, that's true.
You want them to like you and not like you. Like, you do want to play both sides. You want them to agree with you, even though they don't want to agree with you.
Interesting. By the way, you said punchline. Did you ever see that movie years ago with Sally Field and
Tom Hanks? Yeah, of course. It's great. I think it's a great movie.
I have a feeling that's probably pretty real.
I think from what I've heard and what I believe, it's pretty close. I saw that movie, and of course, I'm a critic. You know, I thought a stand-up comedy movie is not going to be very accurate, but they did a great job. Tom Hanks is amazing. What are you going to do? He's great.
Yeah.
He did a great job, Sally Field. The world that they lived in, It was, yeah, I think they pretty much nailed it as far as a movie goes.
Yeah, I think it seemed to me like they did, and I don't know, you know, the behind the scenes. If you get a chance, and I'd really recommend, watch that latest interview with David Letterman and Chappelle. He's God, the guy's so articulate and so smart, and it is so interesting.
Yeah, he's my inspiration. So, that's the whole reason why I started doing stand-up.
Oh, is that right?
Dave Chappelle's comedy specials when I was in college. It was just like, I was addicted. Yeah. I was obsessed. And that's how you get good at stuff. You got to become obsessed.
You know, I recently watched, and I don't know if it was the old one or an updated documentary on Richard Pryor, man. Mm-hmm. That guy was unbelievable.
They have a new documentary series on Showtime about the Comedy Store here in West Hollywood, and it's really interesting. It's about all the people that performed there and came up there and became famous there, or were famous before and started working there, and how much they appreciated that time. And there's a lot of it about Richard Pryor. He was such a big influence on the whole comedy world, but his home club was the Comedy Store.
If it wasn't for Richard Pryor, there wouldn't be like guys like you or Dave Chappelle, would they?
Chappelle or Chris Rock, or no, that's the way they tell it, right? I mean, that's what Dave Chappelle says, and Chris Rock says, and Eddie Murphy says, that they came from Pryor. Like, that's they were a product of Pryor and Carlin and these guys.
Yeah, Carlin was amazing. You know?
The deeper thinkers, not just slapstick, not just shocker, Halsey stuff.
And then, I mean, this was way before your time, but there was the Flip Wilsons of the world, you know, and people like that were hilarious.
Yeah, Lenny Bruce gets brought up a lot.
Lenny Bruce, oh my God, man. That was something to look up, you know, Lenny Bruce. You know, I met a couple of times. I was around Robin Williams, God bless his heart and soul. And man, he was like a machine gun, you know. I had dinner one night with Eddie Griffin Jr. I said to him, I said, you must be exhausted at night. I mean, he never stops. It's just bam, 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 you know?
Yeah. It seems exhausting, somebody like that, but you know, they're just operating at a different level.
Yeah.
When they're around these uber talented comedians long enough, you just start to recognize, like, there's a different level of talent when it comes to guys like that, that could just fire off jokes one after another right off the top of their head without any effort. It's just the way that they think.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's really hard to compete with, but you know, you're just not them. You can't compete with them.
No, you can't, can you?
Or use them somehow, give them opportunity that benefits both of you. That's the way I look at people that are really good at something. Like, how can we elevate you? You know, we need people to know about you.
Well, that's what I do, man. Like, I have no ego about anything. I mean, look at this. How could I have an ego? So everybody I hire around me is a zillion times better than me. Let them do their job. And then I walk the red carpet and I take all the credit. I have no problem with that.
I think that's a brilliant strategy. That's a brilliant strategy. I'm right around there. I mean, I was doing stand-up for a long time. The podcast is something newer because I knew that I didn't want to keep going out. You know, as I'm getting older, I'm married. It's really hard to be out in the clubs and not expect bad things to happen. So I got less and less drawn to that as I did when I started comedy when I was 21. Now I'm 37. So I've changed a lot over that time.
And now you're able to pretty much make a living at it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Wow.
And the podcast is part of that. You know, we want to bridge it over where we can incorporate both and do a lot of animal related events.
Yeah.
You know, as far as comedy goes or any content, like my wife and I are very animal oriented and we want to involve ourselves strictly in that just because we know that it's always a growing market and there's an unlimited amount of animals that need help. And every time I involve myself in a project, there's just so much good I can do. There's just so many people out there that don't know anything. Like you said about not feeding the dog where they bend over or feeding a dog elevated. Simple advice like that goes such a long way for people. And they just couldn't be more grateful. And you're not asking them for money, really. You just ask, hey, check out my podcast. And then it all works itself out.
Exactly. And listen, man, I think there's people out there like myself. I didn't know I was a dog guy. I had no idea, you know, but man, I've turned into a dog guy, you know, and I love it. And you know more than I, but in the pandemic, in this zombie apocalypse, shelters have run out of dogs. Yep. People people have just adopted. I just think that's fantastic.
I do too. I am a little worried, if you want to hear my devil's advocate perspective. I do worry about if things go back to normal, people that at one point spent all day every day with their dogs suddenly are going to leave their dogs home alone for hours and hours and hours while they go to work.
Yeah.
Might not work out for you guys. Like, I think a lot of people need the education before they go out and get a dog because of COVID.
It's not
enough that you're lonely. That's not the dog's problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But then on the other hand,
go ahead.
People have seen now that they can work from home. And I think we're going to see more of that. I think,
No, you're absolutely right. There's no going back. A bunch of businesses have figured out a way to make money without bringing people to work. Why would they, would they go back to renting space that they don't have to rent?
This is great, man. I mean, I don't have any pants on right now. But it's great, isn't it?
I almost did this in my pajamas, but I was like, you know what? I haven't met these people before. Let me go ahead and put on a shirt.
Hey, and by the way, talking about dog movies and our movie too, investforyfortune.com. I got to remember to do it. But
Invest in Furry Fortune, the movie. What is it?
Investfurryfortune.com.
Investfurryfortune.com.
Yeah. And then you can read all of that. It's a great site. But, normally, in a normal situation, what you do is you finish your movie, if you're in the independent world, and then you take the finished product to a distributor, and you let them see if they're going to distribute it or if you got to go down the road to the next distributor. Man, one of the distributors I work with, I sent the script. This never happens, man. Based on just the script alone, they've given us a letter of intent to distribute the film. It never happens. Now, awesome. At the end of the day, I have to look out for the investors and I've got to make the best deal, Sure. But the fact that we already have that on the table just based on the script, says something about family movies and dog movies. And I've worked with them before. And,
a clear sign that what you guys are doing is good. It's working.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know what we're thinking about too? We've been talking about because of the crowdfunding and the perks and all that. We've got to go through a little bit of a rewrite on the script in January to add certain things. And it came up the other day. Wouldn't it be nice to maybe add a scene with maybe a service dog or something in there?
Yeah.
Already the dogs that we've already changed the dog to an adopted dog, a rescue dog. That's our main. It's going to be a rescue dog, but maybe another scene with like a service dog or something would be nice.
And at least it's mentioned that the service dog and
what
it can do, or maybe I don't know the process that it takes to get a service animal, like. It really is good. I think a lot of people in California know about it, but not everywhere else.
Yeah, I think so. I just think they're a great opportunity, to use in a positive way. And I'll be honest with you, until I started talking to Burt Ward, I tell people I may be slow. I'm from Texas, but I eventually get it.
You talk slow. That's all.
and I say that only because I'm a Texan and I can get away with it. But I didn't really take into consideration, if I'm being honest, like Simon Cowell on American Idol, if I'm being honest, I didn't take into consideration the thought, the things that we could put in there as far as health tips for dogs. Sure.
It'd be unlimited, right?
It's unlimited.
Too many options. You have to be really...
It's unbelievable.
Concerning.
Yeah. So they're taking the script and they're going through it. And like we said, it's going to be entertaining, but organic. But I mean, it's a great opportunity to do that and educate people.
Yeah, you think maybe just given the opportunity, you'd want to at least introduce some ideas, maybe just some exposure to an idea, People are like, I wonder what that's about and go look into it later.
Yeah.
That you don't have to fill up a whole page of a script.
Oh yeah. We gotta make it. It has to be entertaining,
Organic,
it has to fit in there.
Something just mentioned or something in the background. And I mean, it's really hard even for this podcast. Like if I make it too much about the animal medicine, it's boring. People don't listen. The episodes.
You have to be careful because you definitely can turn people off, like for instance, I'll just give you an example. I've done quite a few faith-based films and I never wanted to do the kind that hit people over the head or preach to the choir. To be honest with you, I'm an independent producer. The money behind some of my faith-based films has wanted that. And I was talking to a guy in Nashville a couple of years ago, and he said, look, don't be don't let that bum you out, because there are some people that will only see those kinds of movies, which is true. But I try to reach the unchurched, you know, and so you have to be very careful, because I call it God talk. You can't start talking that God talk too soon, because people are turned off to religion, you know, and especially young people. So you have to, it has to come organically. And it's just like with your podcast or even this, you know, we got to be careful so things are organic and happen in an entertaining way. And the audience is not stupid, you know. I used to be a radio disc jockey. By the way, they told me, they used to say I had a face for radio. What?
No, I disagree. You look great. But you look great.
They used to always tell us, you know, don't talk down to an audience. And I think for a long time, for too long, Hollywood and it has talked down to audiences in a way. And audiences are very smart. TV is a good example. I mean, remember not too many years ago, it was kind of like, you know, TV was kind of goofy, you know, but man, the writing on television now and some of the acting, it's better than movies, you know, because they're not talking down to the audience. And so,
it's the age of information. People know, like you said, the audience is not dumb, and you have to really speak their language. You got to talk at the same level. That's a challenge, but you're really, hopefully you're trying to educate as you're trying to entertain. Like that's the easiest way to not do it on purpose. Like you said, it has to be organic. Okay. How can it be organic? Well, we must actually be trying to accomplish something good here. Teach them something.
And you don't think the audience watching now didn't know I didn't have pants on? Of course they didn't. They knew I didn't have pants.
Big reveal.
On.
Well, not, you know, we guess.
By the way, how do you like our background? These guys look.
I'll tell you, it's amazing. It makes me happy. It makes me want to go take my dog for a walk. It makes me want to see the movie. I'm a big fan.
Some cute ones. This has all the markings to be really a classic. You know, they call it evergreen in the film business, you know, it just keeps going and going for years to come. And
yeah, I think a good animal movie, some of the classics, right? You grow up with them when you're a kid, you watch them like every couple of years, then you turn your kids onto them and it's there forever, forever, get it, forever. Get what I did?
Yeah. I love that, man. I love you, man. You guys are, you're so, and by the way, and I'm not just saying this, man, but like you can be proud of this, that you're helping us, you know. Sure. I mean, it you really can.
I am proud. I was blown away, like you were saying, when you got the offer, that you just were like just happy that it started off better than you would have predicted. And the same thing when I got the contact from Jessica, when she contacted me, I was like, oh, this must be some kind of scam. What do you mean? Like, it's too good to be true. Like, well, you really want to be on my little podcast? And I was like, okay, let me look into it. And I saw it was a big project. And I was like, wow, this is really awesome. Like, I'm the one usually reaching out to people. Nobody reaches out to me. But the podcast is growing. Like, I've been talking about it for a long time. It keeps growing and growing.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm really – and it's very organic. Like, I'm not putting – you know, you can always do more. You know what I mean? And I have plans for the future of what I want to do. But in the meantime, it keeps growing. So it's like, okay, let's just riding the wave, see what happens. We got on now. We're doing great.
And you know, it like the big deal out here. I never was one to play the game. I mean, you know, I wanted to kind of have a life too, you know. But man, there's you could go out every night and you know, connect with people and do all of that stuff. I just never played the game, but it's good to connect with people. And now, like you and I have met and are connected you know, I'd help you any way I can, man. I really believe in what you're doing, and I'd love to be able to be a piece
of your
country.
A show. We got an outside show in Englewood on Sunday, the 15th. It's your daughter's birthday. She's invited. But it is an outdoor show, four comics. It'll be about an hour and a half. This episode is going to come out after that, so none of these people are going to hear it. But we're already advertising it on. It's a fun outside show with some really, really very talented comedians, like people that I'm just honored to share a stage with.
Yeah.
I want to do the show that I'm producing, I'm hosting here in Englewood. It's called Parks and Recs. It's an outside park show.
Oh, good. I'm going to write that down. Parks and Recs. Okay.
Parks and Recs.
I love it.
Yeah. WRCKS Recs.
Oh, that's great, man. In Englewood. You know, I remember years ago, it's interesting, you may not know this, but Robert Duvall and Dustin Hoffman and Gene Hackman were all roommates in New York.
Those are like the Rat Pack.
Yeah. And there were some great New York actors. I mean, really great New York actors. And some of them made it and some didn't. But Bobby Duvall would talk about how, you know, the ones that did make it were like the cream and how it rose to the top. I guess you see that too in the comedic world, right? I mean, the cream.
There's no question to the people that are more talented. It's just like, you can't argue it. But like, say I came from Indiana, I was doing comedy there. I was doing comedy in Michigan and Chicago, then in South Korea. So I've done comedy a lot of places. So I thought I knew what talent was, but then I moved to Los Angeles and I was auditioning at these big world renowned clubs. And these guys are coming out of the gate with like 1,000 times more talent than I have. They have in their little pinky. And it's like, wow, those people are the cream of the crop. You have to meet them though, to know that they're regular people. They're just like you. They just have another gear that you don't have. And you just have to really respect
them. Was it intimidating? Were you intimidated seeing that for the first time?
At first I was, when I first moved here, I was very intimidated. But as I became friends with those people, you know, they don't have everything going for them. They have that talent, but you have different talents. You know, everybody's good at something.
So true, man.
Yeah.
So
you have to find what you're good at. You can't compare yourself to others. That's horrible. It's just going to defeat you.
No.
So in the beginning, I just didn't know, because I came from where I was a big fish in a small pond. I was the funniest guy in the scene. And then I moved to LA and nobody gives a shit. Nobody cares if you were the funniest guy in Indiana or Korea. Nobody cares. You have to go there and prove yourself, but you can do it as long as you see what other people are doing that works and try to learn from them.
It's like, you know, people say, oh God, you're a producer and blah, man, it's not brain surgery, you know? And I guess in a word, it's not, I'm not trying to downplay anything, you know? You just got to work.
Call my audience a bunch of idiots. It's all right.
No, man. But it's just a lot of work, man. You got to work for it, don't you?
All the people I know that are successful are because they work hard. The ones that are just talented make it only so far. It's the ones that have it both, the drive and the ability.
That's right. I mean, listen, man, look, Jay, hey, and look at Jay Leno. I mean, I know as a fact that guy went to every affiliate in the country before when they gave him the Tonight Show, or maybe before. He worked for it. You know?
Yeah, that's the stories I love, because I know that's more likely than the presto change your Instagram fame overnight. Like that fast fame. That's like winning the lottery. You can't play that game. You have to play the long marathon game. And know that everything happens for a reason, and that your time will come unless you quit.
It does, man. Listen, not to get too deep or anything, but someone told me one time, it is written. It is written. So it's already written, you know, and the timing is everything. And I believe in God. I believe in a higher power, and I just believe He's in control of everything, you know. And I think about that, and I've gotten to the point now, at the risk of sounding like a whack job, if a door closes, and by the way, I tell my girls, there's not a day goes by that I don't get the rug pulled out from under me. But I've learned to live with it and roll with it. But if I have a door shut, I immediately say thank you, God, for shutting that door, because I wasn't supposed to go through it, in my mind.
Yeah, no, that's something my wife and I talk about a lot, just to try to stay sane in this world. Like, just because something can work out, that should be a clear sign that that's not where you needed to be. You don't want to be a part of something that's going to end eventually. Then what was the whole point? You don't want to invest your time in that. But it is hard to look at it that way. You know, it is at the moment.
It's very hard.
You might take it personally, but you shouldn't. That's one of the keys to happiness. Don't take anything personally.
Oh, God. I know, man.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I worked it up in my mind. I go to all of my auditions because I've worked it up in my mind. This is probably not true, or nobody even said this, but I said to myself, these people come into audition, we're seeing someone every 5 minutes, they're driving 2 hours in LA traffic to get there. So I go to all of my auditions because I think, well, they appreciate a producer being there, you know. I don't know if that's true or not, but man, they will go through 100 no's before they get a yes. And I say, you can't take it personally. I mean, how could you take it personally because you're there maybe 5 minutes, they don't even know you. Right. But it gets hard not to take it personally, doesn't it?
Yeah. And earlier you mentioned, like, how much money do I make doing comedy? It's so inconsistent. I have a job. You know, I'm a teacher. I teach at a medical
school. Oh, right, right.
Yeah. So I teach.
Oh, that takes the load off. Yeah.
Program. And it is a teaching job is so nice when you're a comic because I get to talk again.
Oh.
I get to practice talking. And I teach at a college, so I'm teaching adults. They're not children. And it's nice. It's really great. I have a great schedule, so I can't complain. But, you know, I just refuse to let comedy limit me. The thing was with comedy, it's so inconsistent, the pay, that you can't have a normal life. And if I don't have a normal life, I can't
wait.
I can't sleep. I can't focus. I can't be happy. So
of
I have
course.
To get a lot of – and, you know, as you get older, you need more stability. So as my stability increased, then my writing got better. My comedy improved and the podcast started doing better. Everything fell into place, but I had to keep trying new things. Try this, it didn't work. Try this, it didn't work. Try this, it didn't work. Try this, okay, this works. Keep doing this for a while, see how that goes. And and I've fallen ass backwards into so many opportunities that way that I have to keep doing it. I have to keep trying. Everything just falls into place if you keep moving
forward. You have to, man. And thank God for that day job, man, because that takes the pressure off. You know?
Absolutely.
You know, you said something.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you said something about being happy. The very first movie I produced, stand by for other dropping of names here. Love that. You know? But people say, I don't want to drop names. I love it. But Billy Bob Thornton and Tom Epperson wrote the very first script I ever produced called A Family Thing. And we got to be friends. And man, I bet it was 20 years ago, or 15 years ago or so. I'm at Tom Epperson's house, and I was having dinner, and I'm like, oh, God, man. I said, Tom, man, what's it all about? What's it all about? And he kind of looks for a minute, and he says, it's about being happy. And I'm telling you, man, 15 or 20 years later, I think I'm just now understanding that. It's weird, man, when you get older, you know?
No, I think so, too. It is like that. You can't, I don't know, like we were talking about earlier, it's hard to be honest with yourself when you're not happy. You have more of a tendency to lie to yourself and, you know, just inflate things or make a bigger deal about something than it is or spend way too much time thinking about something than you should if you're not happy. But if you're happy, it's easy to, like, something bad will happen, you let it go. Something good happens, you appreciate it. And it's a mind frame that I think it's really difficult when you're an artist. We all know artists are sensitive. We're putting our heart into our content. If it doesn't do what we want it to do, we're going to take it personally. But, you know, the smart people try again, try again, try again.
Right.
And some people, you know.
I'm sorry. Sometimes they overlap on this. No, but I swear, man, this is so weird. You must be reading my mind because I'm thinking of stuff in your brain. But I was just going to say this about the thing that we have, you and I and people in my business and your business, is we all have this heart of an artist. And man, that's a tough one because not everybody understands that. Not everybody has it and not everybody understands it. And the most weird thing in a way that I found is the people closest to me, like my family, totally don't get it. They totally don't get it. Like my mom, she passed away a few years ago. She lived out in Midland, Texas, and whatever film I had, you know, oh, golly, we're all excited to see it, you know, bring it on out. And so I'd take a DVD out, man. This used to break my heart, but man, I finally got it. I said, they don't have this heart of an artist. Man, they put my film in that maybe I've spent, you know, 3 or 4 years working on. I could set my watch, man, 15 minutes into it. Well, what do y'all want for supper tonight? You know, understand. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean,
of course, I have my comedy special out on YouTube, and I have family members that have never seen it, and I'm like, you don't love me. You don't care about me.
but it's not personal.
But it's not
they
true.
Don't
obviously have, it's not true.
They just don't have that part of an artist.
They don't understand that, like. If they would just watch it and share it, that I might get a couple of thousand more views. You know, they don't understand how it works. Like if you just care a little bit, you
they
can
don't.
Help me out a lot, but you don't get it. You don't
they
get
just,
it.
And if they got it, they would, man.
They would.
I told you my mom passed away a few years ago. Until the day she died, she would say, well, honey, what do you do for a living? You know, I finally started, I just quit trying to explain to her because she never got it anyway. The only thing she wanted to do was sit in a movie theater and watch my name in the credits, you know?
Oh, yeah. But that's a big moment for a mom.
It is, you know. But we have to fulfill that artist heart, you and I, and the people around, you know, in our business. We have to fulfill that. And it's tough, man. It's tough sometimes. But you have to keep moving forward.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You keep meeting people, or I do. I meet people that inspire me around here. That's the one beautiful thing I love about Los Angeles that I don't get every other artist community I've been a part of. In LA, you're always going to meet people that have heard, like, that are more talented than I am, I can say, subjectively or objectively, and they're not getting opportunities like they deserve. So you're in the same boat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, as long as I know that it's not about the opportunities that you're given, it's about the opportunities you create for yourself.
You have to do that. I mean, I talk to people all the time, you know, they're sitting back waiting on it to come. It's never going to come, man. Yet you've got to make it happen. And that's what I like about independent films. The two hardest things about independent films are raising the money and distribution. And somehow I've managed to everything I've ever done's been distributed, and I've been able to put money together to do films. But you have to make it happen. And that's what's so exciting about for young, you know, like young comedians or young filmmakers. I mean, you can go to the Walmart and get a broadcast quality camera or even an iPhone now. You can write a script, make a movie, edit it on your computer at home, and the next thing you know, you're in a film festival.
And, Absolutely, that's what we heard this back in 2010. I remember people telling, "Oh, just take out your iPhone and make a movie," but I didn't believe it. I didn't. I was like, "I can't be that." Yeah. But then so many people made names for themselves off of something like that. I was like, okay, I need to get on board and stop making excuses. Like, really,
if you
want to make it happen, you have the internet, you have a smartphone, you can do it. No big deal. And then I started putting content out, and that's what keeps you alive. It keeps you alive.
Trying something new. It is. And I tell you something, I think I talked to different directors and they kind of poo-poo the idea of doing a movie on the iPhone. That's just ego, man. They want to see that camera and all that. So that's ego.
Not necessary, man. This is 2020. You need the technology.
Oh, man, I love the idea. And next year, I'm going to try to do something just like
that. Have you seen the movies made on the iPhones? Have you seen these?
It's amazing.
They're amazing.
It's amazing.
So amazing.
It is amazing. And by the way, man, like now we can own our own equipment, you know, with an iPhone or the thing about, it's true in films, and you should probably watch this in your comedy videos and things. The first telltale sign of a low budget movie is sound. You can never skimp on sound. I never do.
That's what we say for like my comedy, everybody's comedy album. Like, fuck the video. We need the good audio. People are listening to the jokes. If they can't understand the jokes, it doesn't matter if it looks great. The audio is most important. So for my comedy album, I hired an audio engineer that did my cinematography. Like, he could do cinematography, but he was an audio engineer as his professional background. So I was like, all right. Yes. As long as you can make the audio sound good, we can edit it to make it look decent.
Absolutely, man.
Standing there, you just stand there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're about to take our first break. You okay with that?
Okay.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up. We got about another 20, 30 minutes to wrap up.
Okay.
We got a couple of segments, and so we'll get into those. But right now, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back. I'm going to run to the bathroom, all right?
Okay. I'm wearing those acid diapers, so I'm just going in my pants, you know?
I need to get there. I need an indwelling catheter or something.
Maybe I'll run, too, to the bathroom.
All right, I'll be back. Go. All right, we're back in. Thank you, guys.
Great.
For a little break with us. We're back with Brad Wilson. Brad, we're here. We're talking about the furry fortune. We're about to start wrapping up. You want to be a part of my two segments? You don't have a choice. You have to be a part of them. Okay, you ready? Okay, the only segment that involves you really is we always ask the guests how they feel about eating meat. How do you feel about eating meat?
You know what? I can't tell you how much I appreciate that question. This coming December, in another month, will be 4 years that I haven't eaten meat or chicken.
Wow, congratulations. That's so awesome.
Thank you. I feel good about it. You know, I did it for health reasons, but then I started loving my dog more and animals more, and I feel happy about it. Now, I do eat fish sometimes, you know, but I don't eat the meat. And by the way, that's another thing I can't tell my Texas friends, that I don't eat meat. Are you kidding me? My God, they have it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner down there.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, I'm a big meat eater. Not a big meat eater, but I do eat meat. I'm a carnivore, but I try to limit it. I try to be conscious of it, and I try to be thankful for the animals, you know, yeah. that I'm eating, and yeah. just being appreciative and understanding the process that meat goes through yeah. before it gets to my refrigerator is pretty awful, and just keeping that in mind. And it just really decreases the amount of animals that I'll eat in my lifetime. And that's right. all I really focus on, just trying yeah. to have some kind of a positive turn back on how I grew up. I grew up with, you know, meat was the primary meal.
Yeah. Carne, baby.
I mean, everything. And, you know, and I'm still all about the meat. Don't get me wrong, but conscious of it and try to spread the consciousness. And hopefully one day, I think LA, we see it here in California and Los Angeles, the trend is to be more light on the meat consumption and to eat more fish and to eat more
big time
to be more healthy. And that's the kind of trend that I want to help perpetuate, yeah. you know, of all the trends that you could be a part of, no stupid TikTok dances for me. I want people to be more conscious about their meat consumption and where their meat.
Yeah. I think it's helped me a lot. You know, I think let me tell you, man. So the Justin Ward, the director of the Furry Fortune, he was in Dallas this last week doing a commercial. And so to my horror and surprise, he tells me he went to a vegan Tex-Mex restaurant. In Texas, man. That's illegal. That is illegal in Texas. Can you believe that? I mean, how good could it be without the lard and stuff? And
man, when I first moved to Los Angeles and I was eating vegan and vegetarian, I had the lowest expectations. But it's pretty good. You can find a good a soy chorizo burrito and all this soy product.
Really?
Yeah, man, they could dress it up and make it pretty good. It's not as good as regular chorizo. I'm not saying
that,
but it's good. It's edible, and it's nice to just like have other options sometimes.
Well, it's true, man.
Go to a restaurant and try something new. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's what I really miss. Even more than the barbecue, I miss the Tex-Mex. You know, it's a different kind of Mexican. And I just don't know where one is in L.A. I've never found one.
I've never heard of it, Tex-Mex, because there's so much fusion Mexican food here. It's a lot of Asian Mexican fusion here. That's the big fusion.
Yeah, isn't that? Do you know what Tex-Mex is? It's basically a lot that yellow cheese, a lot of yellow cheese.
No, is that what it is?
Yeah, it's the yellow cheese Mexican food.
Hey, sounds good to me though. I think all the food coming out of Texas just sounds good. It just sounds like things every day almighty. In Texas.
I'm a C-cup, you know, because I grew up in Texas, man.
Yeah, so I never try to tell people, like, not to eat meat, just to think about it a little bit more.
Yeah.
The only segment, how do you feel about it? Because I take breaks from meat. I feel like that's a good way to go about it.
Yeah.
Just take breaks. Some meals are just meat-free. Some of my meals are vegetarian or vegan. Just to force myself to eat more vegetables and to save some animals out there. You know, I can't look at a cow and tell you it's not cute. Cows are pretty cute.
I know it, man. I know.
I feel bad. But I was going to say, jokingly, people should just own their own animals. Like, if we all had land, we could all have our own animals that we could farm meat. And that would be ideal, but there's no land like that around here.
There's no, like my daughter calls them, the McMansions. They have to build up here. There's no land. Man, before I learned you were not Korean and doing this podcast on dogs, I had a lot of one-liners that I was sitting on, but, you know, they would have been not very tasteful.
No, I used to do a lot of roast battle at the Comedy Store, and people would make fun of me that all the time because it goes together. Albert used to live in Korea. He works with dogs. Boom, there's a joke. It came up every single time. Some kind of animal.
I love
it. Or dinner. No, it's hilarious.
That's like, great.
It's just a joke, but it's really funny. I never, you know, I always knew it was coming.
Yeah, yeah.
You knew that joke was coming, but that's what makes it.
Yeah, you knew it was.
For sure. Every time.
I love it.
And it's hilarious. Okay, so the other segment on here is people actually send me pet questions on the internet. Do you have a dog? Do you have any pet health questions?
Well, you know, I one of the there the, my dog has one kind of a health problem, and I've looked online, and it seems like this breed this happens, but she has I have to clean her eyes every day. They cake over, and to the point sometimes when she's sleeping, I mean, she wakes up and can't see. And so someone recommended some drops, so I clean her eyes and do the drops every day. I had a vet that's pretty well known to rip people off here in my area. And they tried to tell me she had inverted eyelashes.
I was going to say entropion. Entropion is when their eyelids are in, so their eyelashes grow into their eyeballs.
That's a legit thing.
It's pretty common on those little dogs that have a lot of fur around their face and eyes.
Hello?
It is pretty common. Now, the surgery is not a guarantee, though. They can try to fix it with surgery, but a lot of times those sutures, it flips back in eventually over the dog's lifetime. But what I recommend is just keeping them clean, keeping them groomed, and really it depends on how bad the condition is. Some of the dogs, it's so bad that they need surgery. Other dogs, you can maintain it by cleaning it daily.
Right.
Eye drops, like that's pretty good to maintain. How old is this dog?
I think around 7.
Okay, so she's
It's a she. Let me. She's down here underneath me.
Go ahead. Let me meet her.
Look at my microphone's falling like a hillbilly. and I just got her groomed, and they cut her really short, and I actually think she looks pretty cute, but oh my God. So we got her, I got her groomed.
And I could barely hear you now. I think you turned down your mic.
Oh God. Can you hear me at all?
Better, but it's still pretty quiet.
Better?
I think so.
Okay. She got cut pretty short. And so she was like shaking, man. She was like cold. So my daughter and I had to go get her a little sweater, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The sweater is super cute. My dog wears a little sweater when it's cold out in these California cold 40-degree nights, cold to us. Oh, I see the crusting in her eyes. I can see it.
Yeah. I just cleaned them a while ago too, you know, but.
Yeah, unfortunately, like that condition that the doctor was telling you of, that entropion is pretty common in these breeds that just have the terrier breeds that have a lot of fur around their face. It is common, and it's really hard to manage. It really is. It's just like daily cleaning, daily maintenance, warm compresses on the eyes, like warm, wet washcloth. If you just like lay it on there for a while, let it soak up some of that, and then you can clean it out easier. You just don't want it to get crusty and infected. Like if it crusts up too much, it sticks to the skin. And then when you try to remove it, it like rips off skin with it and it'll bleed. So you want to try to avoid that.
Well, that's a great tip, man, to just put the washcloth on.
Yeah, warm, wet washcloth. Let it soak there for 10, 15 minutes. And then you can get a little comb and comb out those eye boogers. And it's less traumatic than trying to pull them out or cut them out.
It's terrific. Thank
you. Little advice like that. And I'm still having a hard time hearing you. I'm sorry, Brad, but you're very quiet now. I'm not sure what happened.
Hey, if I take this out, can you hear me now?
Yeah, way better. Now you're super loud.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Better to be loud than quiet. I can turn you down.
Oh, good. Okay. I had this snowball thing plugged in, and I don't know what happened.
A great USB mic. I'm not sure either. I'm not worried about it. We're almost actually done here. So that's a great time for us to have technical problems. So I just
almost time to get the hook.
Yep. Sorry, man. It happens to everybody. The show's got to end. So the
other. Oh, you know, I was going to ask you one thing. You know who was my hero years ago when I was young was Soupy Sales. Did you ever hear of Soupy Sales?
Who's that?
He was a comedian and had a kids' TV show, and I've got a couple of his albums, you know. I tell you, some great albums are those Bob Newhart albums from back in the day.
Yeah, the Bob Newhart, I bet those are great. You should, you got some Instagram content. Later on, we're going to get some social media stuff from you. Do you have, like, Twitter, Instagram stuff for the film?
Yes. Well, we have Facebook, I think. I don't think
we have
Twitter, Instagram up yet.
We'll tell people about that. Questions other people had. Somebody was asking me about Boston Terriers. The question says, this is from my friend Michael Brown. I met him in South Korea. He was a comedian. He said, I love a Boston Terrier, one of these dogs for the kids this year, but I think they're a little expensive. I was also reading because they are bred to have squished heads, that they might suffer more health problems, eyes and breathing, etc. Feedback. And this is absolutely true. For anybody who wants to order, own a Boston Terrier or a French Bulldog or an English Bulldog or a pug, the squished heads, they call them the brachycephalic breeds. And the brachycephalic breeds have the inbred breathing issues and eye problems, but mostly breathing respiratory issues. They can't breathe very well. That's why they snort and snore and grunt a lot. People think it's cute, but it's really an animal struggling to breathe. So these breeds are ultra expensive to buy because they're a very popular breed, and then they have a ton of health issues. So they're going to cost you a lot of money over the life of that animal. And it's a cute breed, it's a great breed, but there are a lot of other breeds that don't have those issues that were bred into them. This breed is man-made. It's not dogs don't normally have no nose. This dog is bred to live that way. And if people were to breed them properly, it would be less of an issue, but we have too many backyard breeders that are just perpetuating these horrible breeds that can't breed. And then they end up being given away or sent to the shelter or given up because people can't afford the health issues and people don't want to deal with an animal that has all these health problems. So it becomes a sad situation for these cute little dogs. The Boston Terriers, if you don't know, they have a great personality. They're great dogs, but the breeding is meant for them to have respiratory issues. So we try to ban certain breeding, like these brachycephalic breeds. There's a lot of people out there that are pro-banning breeds, which I am, and I know it's controversial, but working with these dogs is really hard. It's really hard to help these dogs when they have breathing problems because it's their anatomy. It's their normal anatomy. So you can't really do a lot for them. You just kind of monitor and manage and maintain. And it's sad. I think it's sad. If I'm listening to this dog grunt and snarl or snort and snore, hey, okay. It's like, can you imagine every time we try to breathe, it's
my dog kind of like does that a little bit, you know, like
you have a littler terrier dog. So these are terriers also, right? So Boston Terrier, your little dog is like a terrier.
But it's a Yorkie poo.
Say that again.
A Yorkie poo.
Yorkie poo. Yeah. Yorkie terrier and a poodle.
Oh yeah. 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 Okay.
And those terrier breeds, they're smaller, they're lower to the ground. So they're breathing in a lot of dust and dirt a lot of times. And they're used to sniffing around. They're little mousers, you know, that's what they're bred for.
Yeah.
Out little vermin. So they're going to breathe in a lot of dirt and pollen and grass.
Interesting.
And cause them some respiratory issues for that. And a lot of them develop allergies from stuff like that too.
Wow.
Makes that's them have those reverse sneezing, kind of coughing fits, like asthma type symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
That's normal for a little terrier dog.
My gosh. You know, my neighbor has a great heart, Steve Foster's dogs. And man, it's pretty sad sometimes, some of the dogs that come in, but she's got a good heart.
Yeah, I really love people that do the fostering
yeah.
adoption.
Yeah. You know,
it's just a huge service to the animal world, and not enough people do it. And some people that, like me, I would love to foster. I would love to, but I live in an apartment and I can't.
Yeah,
so it's like, you know, people like me out there that really want to help and are limited in how I can help. So this is a way that I help, the podcast. I do a lot of volunteering for low income or homeless people that have pets, where we do vaccinations for free. I'm actually doing one tomorrow.
So wow, bless your heart.
Where is it? It's like somewhere up north. It's Little Rock. I think it's called Little Rock. It's up in north in the mountains, like.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in like somewhere above the mountains. I'd never been over there. It's like an hour and a half drive.
God bless you, man.
Yeah.
You got a great heart.
And it's so easy. It's so easy to help these people. And they get so much out of the help. And it's really like stuff that I could do with my eyes closed to help these people. And they're just super, super supportive and appreciative. And it's just a great thing to do.
That's what it's about, isn't it? About helping others. And
little connection. You make little connections with people.
Yeah.
You get opportunities from that. And some of them are better than others, but it's like you keep growing your little fan base, you want to call it, of people that appreciate your help. It's like, okay, I like that feeling.
I do too, man. Well, I'm really serious. If there's anything I could ever do to help you in any of these things you're
doing. I mean, I'm here
for you. We're going to put this episode out. It's going to kill. It's going to do great. And then we're going to have you on for a second episode after the movie, maybe, and have another.
Oh, thank you.
I would love to. So I got
oh, I'd love that, man.
From the internet. Are you ready for this one?
Sure.
This is from my friend Mitch. I went to high school with Mitch. I think he lives in Florida now. He says, my dog is only 5 pounds and doesn't really go anywhere. His question is about a leptospirosis vaccine. Leptospirosis is a virus that's spread in dirty water that animals pee in. Like if a raccoon or a fox or another dog that's not vaccinated has leptospirosis, this virus that's in the wild, it's just in the dirt. They can pee in the water, and if another animal drinks that water, like from a puddle or a stream or a lake or whatever, they can get this leptovirus that really shuts down their kidneys. So the question is about lepto. He's asking, my dog is only 5 pounds and doesn't really go anywhere but my backyard or not far from us when traveling. The vet recommended it and we gave her the booster and she seems very slow and weird, but I read some back and forth on especially for small dogs. So this is kind of a two-part question. Vaccinating small dogs is tricky. They can get vaccine overload pretty easily. We're gonna give the same amount of vaccine to a Great Dane as we would to a 5 pound Chihuahua. So we have to be careful about overloading them. We wanna do vaccines in stages. For a big dog, you might be able to do them all at once. For a little dog, you would do a few this week, a few next week, a few the week after that, and kind of space them out. But for this lepto, it depends where you live. If you live in a place where there's a lot of wildlife, you need it more. If you live in a place where a lot of people are not vaccinating their pets, you need it more. Now, if you live in the middle of nowhere, and it's just you and your pets, and there's no wildlife around, then you probably don't need it. But how many people live in that environment? There's probably unvaccinated animals around. There's probably raccoons and possums and cats or whatever in your neighborhood that could have it. So it's really like up to you. These kinds of vaccines, it's just like vaccinating your kid. Like the doctor could try to sell you on it. The internet could sell you on a different idea. I could sell you on a different idea, but it's really up to you. Do you want to vaccinate your pet for something that it might never come in contact with? It's like the COVID vaccine. Do you really want to get vaccinated for something that you might never get? Or do you want to vaccinate just to be safe? But vaccines have their own side effects. So it's like, you never know. It's
right.
A really difficult choice to make.
Would you recommend, because I have some friends that had a dog that kind of lost its mind, and they feel like that the dog got too much rabies shots, too much of a shot too early, and they did some kind of research. Is it okay to continue to get rabies shots for your dogs through the years? Or?
Well, there's two schools of thought on it. Like you can definitely give animals 1 year rabies or a 2 year like a rabies vaccine that lasts a year, or another one that lasts 2 years, or another one that lasts as much as 3 years. So these vaccines, they're all the same. It's just a matter of how long the antibodies stay in your body to an active amount. Like there's just got to be enough antibodies that it can fight the disease. So a lot of people choose to do titers where they check the animal's blood titer level for a particular antigen or antibody. And they can see, okay, this animal has enough to protect it from rabies for another year. So I don't need the vaccine. But the vaccine is $15. The titer test is $90. So you're like, if you're a poor person, you might as well just get the vaccine, even though you might not need it. If you have $90 is nothing to you, then you might as well get the titer and see if you need it or not. And it just depends on what you can afford. But if you have, in my opinion, and I'm probably going to lose my vet tech license for saying this, if you have an adult dog or adult pet and it's been vaccinated several times in its adult life, like several full vaccine series, by the time your dog is 7, 8, 9, 10, it really doesn't need those anymore. It's very little chance it's going to come in contact with other animals.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It doesn't have enough passive immunity or active immunity to cover itself from those kind of diseases. And then as the animal gets older, their immune system is weaker. So to keep vaccinating them is really putting a strain on that immune system that's not necessary if you have a dog that doesn't go anywhere. If you have a dog that doesn't go anywhere, it just stays with you. You walk it in your backyard, you bring it back in, you really don't need to keep vaccinating. But then the 1 out of a million chance you take your dog for a walk and another dog comes and bites it, or you take your dog on a hike and a raccoon comes out of nowhere and they start fighting, then suddenly you wish you got that rabies vaccine.
But it's
a really rare situation. It's pretty rare.
Yeah. God, man, this is great. I love this. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah. Here's something depressing. I went to, you know, a certain age, and, you know, so I got a pneumonia shot the other day. So somebody said, get a pneumonia. So the guy, I don't know whether to laugh or cry. The guy says, well, you'll never have to get another one the rest of your life. And I thought, man, if I'm not depressed enough already about being an old guy, you know, so I'll never have to get another one.
You'll ever need, buddy.
What in the world, man?
Hey, that's what, a dog at the age of 7 is like a man at the age of 50. Like, it's your time is coming. You know, it's like, you're not
going to start
looking at the reality. And that's sad for people when we tell them about their dog at 7 is considered a senior pet at 7. So anything
after, I know, man. I know.
You should just be grateful. If your dog lives to be 8, that's a great life for a dog. If
yeah.
your dog lives to be 10, that's a great life. And yeah,
yeah.
15, 16, 20, that's possible. But don't have your heart set on that. They all get sick as they get older.
They do.
It's just a
bless their hearts.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, that's my job. My job is to make let people have realistic expectations. I find the reason why a lot of animals end up in the shelter is because people don't have realistic expectations. So even though it might be a hard truth, a difficult truth,
that's true.
Better that you know what it's really like to own a pet the proper way. And I know that you can disagree with me what's proper and what's improper to raise a pet, but not very much. I'm pretty across
the
board, like what is proper pet care that you can really argue with me. It would be hard for you to argue with me.
Of course, man.
There's different schools of thought. You can have the outside dog. You can have the inside dog. You can have the dog that's both. You can have the dog that does a job that actually herds sheep or, you know,
moms
or something. It's not the same as your little chihuahua puppy that lives in your purse. Those are two kinds of dogs.
Yeah, mine's a house dog, and I've got her trained to pee-pee pads, you know?
There you go.
So we both use the pee-pee pads now.
Yeah, you just wrap yours around your waist and call it a diaper. There you go.
That's right. The NASA diaper.
Well, I'm glad you're here, man. That's all my segments. We're about to wrap it up here.
Man, I've loved it.
Thank you, Brad.
You're a great guy, man.
Yeah, this was an excellent time. Is there anything else out there that we can go check out for the Furry Fortune? I know you want to drop the .com one more time.
Yeah, just if you could just go to investfurryfortune.com. Here's the
furryfortune.com.
Yeah, and that would be great. We'd appreciate it. And you could read all about the movie. And man, I have really enjoyed this. You're a great guy, man, a great heart. And I really appreciate you helping us out on this and telling people.
Thank you guys for reaching out. And, you know, everybody out there, check out the podcast. This will be episode 44 or 45, I think, something like that. And it'll come out on Monday, November 16th. And we look forward to the Furry Fortune coming out. When's the release date for this? Any kind of?
Well, we're going to start shooting mid-March. And so it'll probably be the end of the year, first part of next year. You know, it takes
2021.
Yeah, probably something like that, yeah.
All right, well, we just want to be invited to the premiere. Remember that.
Oh, I want you to come, man. I want you.
And we'll bring my dog.
I want you to, and I mean that, too. I really.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much. We love to have anybody out there. You want to talk about dogs, come on the podcast. Send an email, petpeevespodcast@gmail.com. If you have any pet questions, send them to the Gmail or to the Instagram or to the Twitter. You can find the Pet Peeves Podcast on Instagram @PetPeevesPodcast, on Twitter @PetPeevesPod. You can find me, Albert Escobedo, on Twitter @AlbertEscobedo, and Instagram @AlbertEscobedo. And you can find my comedy special, 1 hour long comedy special, free to watch on YouTube called Don't Judge Me. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you, Brad, one more time.
Thank you.
See you guys in the next episode.
God bless you, man. We'll be right back.